like to express my appreciation for being able to be here with you. I think this is incredible. How many years? 30 years of maintaining this collective. One of the things that a compañera Adriana had wanted me to talk about is the book, The Road to Socialism is Painted Black, which is something that I think was published in 1987 and has been out of print for a long time. There is another book that will be coming out at least by June that I've done. But I can tell you some things about that book. And I would like to talk to you just a bit about why I think it is important that we do write and we do read and that we do engage in this contest of ideas that's happening in the world today. In fact, we are involved in a contest of ideas, and I think it's really important that we play a role in this contest, that we not simply be passive forces here who see our lives affected by the ideas that other people have, but that we jump into the fray ourselves, and that we learn some things to equip us to be able to be involved in this struggle. First of all, I want to say that I'm a revolutionary, and I cannot, it's such a simple thing to say, it flows off the tongue so easily, but I think it has profound significance. It's not even talked about that much anymore. You don't even hear people that much in the world talking about making revolution. But I'm one of those people who has come to the conclusion that there is no predicament that the mass of humanity find ourselves confronted with short of overturning the entire rotten, foul social system that is responsible for the fact that half the people on this earth live off less than $2 a day. And if you are in Africa, south of the Sahara, then you are one of the people who live off $1 or less a day, which is less than a cow in Europe has to survive on. It is said that a cow in Europe is provided with $2 a day for its upkeep. And so in Africa, most of the people there have less to live off than a cow in Europe. That's a hell of a state of affairs for us to be confronted with as a people. But the vast majority of people on earth are confronted with these conditions and circumstances, and there's something wrong with that. Like most people who I knew, especially my age, I was motivated to get involved in struggle, not by fancy ideas. And before I ever went to a library to read anything about theory, etc., but it was experiences in life, my life, my parents' lives, my neighbors, everything that I saw around me. And seeing those things and having enough information about what was happening in the outside world. And when I say the outside world, I'm talking about how white people live in general, in the same city. You live in the same city, and you would see the mothers of your friends up early in the morning to wait for a car driven usually by a white man or a white woman, and they often wearing their little white uniforms would get in the back seats, leave their own children at home, and then go to take care of the children of white people. To grow up in those circumstances, to grow up reading regularly in newspapers about another African captured and lynched by a mob of white people someplace, to be involved in situations where Africans were treated less than human, having to ride in the back of buses and drink out of certain fountains that were reserved just for us. I mean, these are the things that in my life had me reach some conclusions. It wasn't because I read something in a book, etc. I didn't. And I became very angry. I became extraordinarily angry. And I was what would probably be called a black nationalist, even before I understood what nationalism was. And my observations also made me a person who, after a period of time, because there's a profound contradiction that that most African people of my generation, especially if you had a minimum amount of information, it's a profound contradiction. On the one hand, there's this hatred that one can develop for white people. On the other hand, there's this appreciation and love that one has for white people. I know it's an extreme, strange thing to talk about existing in the same body, but it was there. All the things that we, even as we hated what white people were doing, and I could say I hated white people, I really could say that at a certain juncture, all the things that we came to understand that was beautiful and good, et cetera, was white. It was white. And so it was this interesting kind of contradiction that existed inside of me. And started off, of course, in the beginning of self-hatred, hatred of myself, and that I did not recognize. And when you hate self for the reasons that America taught me to hate myself, you end up hating everybody who's like you, whether you intend to or not. You hate your parents, you hate your neighbors, you hate the woman who you sleep with because something must be wrong with her, otherwise she wouldn't like you. And because you've accepted the definition that's given to you by white America, who you are and who we are as a people. And it took going through this entire process of learning to hate white people that made it possible for me to ever love myself again. And but it was a superficial analysis in some ways. In other ways, it's not, because Marx, a man named Karl Marx, once says that theory, when it grips the masses, it becomes a material force. You know, it's like once people accept the theory as reality, it's no longer just an idea that's out there. It becomes like a material force. And we live in a world that was constructed off of the rape and pillage of most of the world by Europe, and a whole political, social, a whole economic and social system that dominates the world, that comes, that has its origin in slavery, and in capturing our resources and controlling our lives, and in explaining itself, it creates a philosophy that justifies our existence. And this philosophy that justifies its existence is what most people refer to as racism. And when we say that my analysis was superficial in saying that white people were the problem, it wasn't exactly superficial, because white people in general accept these philosophical assumptions about who they are in relationship to the rest of us. And to the extent that they accept that, they do bad things and to us. But anyway, the book, as I said, is out of print, The Road to Socialism. But the book was based on certain premises that I'd like to talk to you about briefly. Is that this world that we live in is, in fact, the features of it, the contours of it, of this world that we live in, is something that was achieved as a consequence of rape and pillage. It is the origin of the wealth of Europe and North America, the North Americas, as people are now known. It is the basis of all the resources that they have. It is part of a dialectic, however, that makes a part of the world poor, the vast majority of us poor, and a handful of the world's peoples wealthy at our expense. That's a reality. That's an objective reality. And there's a theory about how the world came to be as it is. There are several theories. Some of the theories are ones that you'll either be taught directly or by inference in all the institutions that you run into. As I grew up, I came to understand the way the world is, and sometimes quite brutally, because I was taught that the majority of us are poor because we are not as civilized as white people are. White people are civilized. There's this sort of a step process of civilization. White people are way up here, and we're down here at the bottom. And so we're not as civilized as white people, and that's why we are poor everywhere. Everywhere you look on the earth, Africans are poor. And we were also taught that even when we do get money, we are not thrifty. You've heard this before, haven't you? Everybody has heard this before, haven't you? That we don't save our money. We act foolish on the weekends. We've heard this before, haven't you? And that's the explanation that's given to us about our condition. That's what I was taught. It's not taught as explicitly anymore like that, but it is inferred all the time. And sometimes it's taught when they tell you that the reason you can't work is because you don't wear your pants right, because you don't perform right in the interviews. Like when you go to get a job interview, you use slang. You talk like you do in the ghettos and the barrios instead of how you should be speaking. And professors who look just like us, like we do, often on the front line trying to teach us how to speak correctly and to sit and stand correctly when getting job interviews. There's an inference there. Except the problem with that is everywhere I go, I find in banks and department stores and other people having jobs, the Russians who can't speak English, you understand what I'm saying, and other kinds of folk who just, you know, who yesterday were enemies of America, but today they seem to love them quite well, etc. And so, obviously, that has nothing to do with it. But there's another assumption, too, that about our condition. And this was extremely troubling as well, because it came from what was the most progressive sector of European thought. These were essentially Marxists, and who taught us about this stair-step, also, level of human development. And there was a Marxist formula for human development. There is a Marxist formula for the development of human society. And it is one that starts human society as moving from the lower level to the higher level, and progressively higher. And starting off at a certain juncture in prehistory, when everyone was equal, and there was no exploitation of people by other people. Women weren't treated like house pets, as is the case today. And we are told that this was back at a time when there were few resources, and because there were so few resources, that's the basis of the sharing that went down, which doesn't make sense to me, because when I see poverty is when I see most of the time there are contradictions, and not when you, in fact, the police department here knows that when the unemployment goes up, then they can look for all kinds of problems in the society, from criminal behavior in terms of robbery and theft and things like that, to spousal abuse, etc. That's when you find the greatest contradiction. But the Marxists have concluded that the reason there was this sharing is because then society, the capacity of people to produce what they needed to exist was so low that for the society itself. And so there was sharing and et cetera. But at some juncture, according to this philosophy, people began to produce more effectively. So that whereas it used to be, men would go out and hunt, and sometimes would come back with a deer, and sometimes would come back with a rabbit or nothing, and it's hard to feed, you know, a community off a rabbit or nothing. And that women played central roles because women were essentially the ones who controlled the house and then controlled whatever kind of gardens or food that was there, and so there was power here. But at a certain juncture, they said that agriculture began to emerge, and people, instead of killing a deer, would capture it and capture two or three, and they would domesticate them and would be able to get milk and other things from it, and would begin to domesticate certain plants. And when this happened, according to the Marxist theory, there emerged for the first time in human history a surplus. As I say, the community now had more than what it needed to survive. And when that developed, then the question of who would control the surplus became a factor in the society for the first time. And out of this contradictions of this society, a new social system was born. Out of this situation with non-exploitation, non-oppression, etc., at the moment surplus was introduced, according to the Marxists, there emerged a slave society out of that. Not the slavery that we are familiar with here, but it's like Spartacus, you know, and Rome, and where Europeans essentially were engaged in slavery as a mode of production. And now the primary contradiction in this society, whereas in the previous society, the primary contradiction existed between humans and nature. How to get what we needed to exist out of from nature, and what we needed to have to live from nature. Now the primary, with the emergence of slavery, the primary contradiction in society exists between the slave owner and the slave master. And so this takes us to a higher level, according to the Marxists. And then contradictions here, you know, slaves don't work easily, you know, when you're owned by somebody else and you don't get anything for what you do. There's no real incentive to go to work, except the lash, except somebody being punishing you, etc. It takes an extreme amount of brutality to maintain that kind of thing. There's always rebellions. There's always somebody plotting how we're going to kill the slave master, which is, I think slave masters should be killed, frankly, and in any age. And so this is an ongoing discussion. People are breaking tools, terribly inefficient, etc. And so out of the contradictions of this society, according to the Marxists, a new society emerges. And this is feudalism. This is when we met this guy. When we met the white man, when we met the European, he was existing in feudalism. Feudalism is a society where now the primary contradiction in society is between the landlords, those who own the land, and the serfs, or the peasantry, those who work the land. And part of the time they work the land, they work for themselves, and the other part, they work for the landlord. So now there's some incentive to work because you get to keep a little of what it is that you earn. However, the contradictions here are still profound. Because even though, unlike in slavery, when you could be sold or killed or anything by the slave master, you're not property in that sense. If the land is sold, you go with the land. You're not absolutely free. And again, part of your labor is being stolen from you. You have to pay the landlord. And this is like Robin Hood and King Arthur and all the stuff that white folks are putting in movies today to really recreate the sense of white nationalism. What is it? There's a lot of that happening right now in the movies. But the problem is, and then of course, there are all kinds of contradictions here. And then they say, out of this contradiction, to a higher level of society, there's the emergence of capitalism. And then capitalism, of course, is now, is George Bush and the rest of it. But the problem here is that to get from feudalism to capitalism, the Marxists did an interesting thing. Marx himself did a very interesting thing. For the first time, he steps outside of the process of the society itself to have emerging a new society. We could see how out of slavery there came feudalism. And we could see how out of this primitive communism, as it was referred, there was slavery. But now he comes to this thing called capitalism. But to get from feudalism to capitalism, he comes up with a concept that's referred to as the primitive accumulation of capital. He says that in order for there to be capitalist production, there must first be capitalist accumulation.
Well,
but in order for there to be capitalist accumulation, there must be capitalist production. He said, The only way we can get out of this vicious circle then is to presuppose there must have been accumulation of capital that predated capitalist production. And this accumulation of capital that came before capitalist production was what he referred to as primitive accumulation. What did he say primitive accumulation was? He said primitive accumulation was turning Africa into the warren, a warren for the hunting of black skins. It was interring the Indians in North America, into the Americas, into the mines, etc., who were bringing up the gold and silver. It was turning China. It was the Opium War fought against the people of China that turned China into a nation of dope addicts in 1840 and 41. It was the war against the Vietnamese, that where the French held Vietnam for 100 years as a drug colony. I mean, these were the resources. It was the attack on America itself, this that they now refer to as America, that brought all these resources that transformed Europe from what it was. And what Europe had been up to now was a disease-ridden, impoverished place that had only become identified as Europe, as a single entity, conceptually, with the advent of colonialism. Before then, up until even the 17th century, there was no such thing as a concept as Europe or Europeans. It was a slavery and colonialism that consolidated the identity of this one people, who previously were just warring tribes contending with each other throughout this area that we now know as Europe. So here's the process that gave rise to Europe, to the European access, to the white man, if you will, on the one hand, to the wealth, and where they come to get the wealth. They came where it was. Somebody asked a guy named Willie Sutton, who was a bank robber, I think in the 20s or 30s, and they finally captured Sutton. They said, why you rob the banks? He said, because that's where the money is, right? And that's exactly where the Europeans went. And I'm not, what I want you to understand is this. I'm not giving you a racial analysis. What I'm trying to do is offer you an historical materialist analysis of how this condition in the world that we are confronted with now, how it emerged, how it got there. And I want to hope that I can say some things to you about what's happening now that shows that this thing is in a severe crisis. This world is in severe crisis because of that.